across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
There's a big show today. Just Eat, major, well, one of the biggest food platforms in the world, at the centre of their customers being scammed. To the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds in total. We spell it all out on the programme this morning. And then children with special educational needs and an advocate for them. My goodness, a pretty straight talker putting it up to some of the authorities in this country to deliver for children. Have a listen. The Stephen Nolan Show! Can you imagine anybody not talking about a story if there were multiple armed robberies of local family-run businesses throughout Northern Ireland? Well, robbery doesn't need to be armed to get your attention, because local businesses are on their knees, having lost tens of thousands of pounds each in many cases. There is a robbery going on in Northern Ireland, where lots and lots of your local restaurants are being held up, cleaned out. The Raj restaurant, 53,800 quid, gone. The Picara in Bangor, 19 grand, gone. Lily's restaurant, Chinese restaurant in Bangor, 7.5 grand, gone. Nemo's, 15,200 quid. And it goes on and on and on. And what this story relates to, one of the biggest food platforms in the world, Just Eat. So hackers, somehow, and that's where the controversy lies, have been able to go into the Just Eat platform, and they have been able to divert money away from these local businesses, away from their bank accounts, and money being sent into the bank accounts of a fraudster. Now, Just Eat are essentially saying, well, all of these local businesses, they must have given out all the security codes. Our system is secure. And I've been talking to lots of these businesses who are saying, we haven't. We just haven't done it. And right in front of your eyes in Northern Ireland, many, many local businesses being scammed. Just Eat refusing to take responsibility for it, saying it is not their responsibility. They say that they feel sorry for these businesses, but they're essentially saying that these businesses have been stupid enough to hand out their own access codes. Michael Henderson might have something to say about that, Chief Executive of Northern Ireland's Food to Go Association. Morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen.
You're aware of over £200,000 robbed in Northern Ireland, and that's just the start of it.
We are, Stephen. This has been going on now from Christmas 2022. Just Eat have been aware of this. The PSNI have been aware of this. Claire Hanna actually brought this up in Westminster. And he just seemed to be ignoring these victims.
And what about Just Eat's claims that they've conducted thorough investigations, there's no breach of Just Eat's security? That's with relation to the Picara and Bangor, Lely and Bangor.
This has seemed to be the same generic outcome after every victim comes forward. See, they said the exact same that when it came to the attention of the public and to Just Eat in 2022. It basically copied and pasted the same outcome again. If this is one or two victims, then you may question that. But when there's so many victims saying the exact same thing, there's a common denominator here. Because these victims aren't just from one area of Northern Ireland. These are ranging from all around Belfast to Bangor to the North Coast, you know. So the one calm down denominator here is the Just Eat is not paying these victims. It's not reaching these takeaways accounts.
And what Just Eat are doing, they take quite a significant proportion of the revenue. So when you as a customer order your food from Just Eat, that order goes through to the restaurant. The restaurant do not get, obviously Just Eat are getting their money immediately, the money that you pay when you order from Just Eat, that money Just Eat receives immediately. And then weeks later, that money minus Just Eat's profits is supposed to go to the local restaurant. Now, what Just Eat are doing, despite knowing that that money has then been diverted to a scamster, Just Eat are still retaining their slice of the revenue. They're taking the profit when they know, they certainly know with hindsight, that these local businesses have not had a penny. And they're still taking their proportion of the profit from the total sum that's ended up with a fraudster.
Yeah, that's right. Just they have a responsibility here, Stephen. Not just to these food to go outlets, but to the customers who use their platform. These customers use the platform believing that their money was going to go to these local businesses who invest back in the communities, who help grow our local economy. But what's happened is when they've paid for the Just Eat app, rightly so, Just Eat have took their commission, they've took their extra adding on costs, but the one payment that hasn't went through is to our food to go outlets, as that seems to go to the fraudsters.
Gina is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Gina.
Good morning.
You're one of the victims of this. Tell me about your business. Tell me what's happened.
I'm based in Maidstone in Kent. So back in May, I hadn't got up to looking up to my statement for a few weeks because I had other things going on. Logged into my account so I can see what was going on, and my money was gone. To which I contacted Just Eat, explained what's going on. They said, well, you've transferred your money into another account. And I said, well, I haven't, because I've only got access to my app, and you've got to do everything through a partner centre. I haven't done that. I'm questioning you where my money's gone. So I'll fast forward. I then investigated the bank that they said it had gone into. I spoke to them repeatedly, time and time again, which took me forever to send authorisation. They wanted to see who I was, if I was a hacker. The bank eventually clarified that I'd never had a bank account with them. I never have. None of my family have. Just Eat wanted proof of this. I gave it back to them to prove that I've never had a bank account with them. So I thought, brilliant, this is it. I haven't, you know, there you go. It's not me. They said, no, you have got access to your partner centre. Therefore, you've done this to yourself.
And the reason, reason we're talking to you is, this is a national story.
Yeah.
This is not just happening. It is happening, and that's our focus this morning. It is happening to businesses in Northern Ireland. But if Just Eat are trying to say, look, well, this is a couple of people in Northern Ireland being stupid enough to hand out their business codes, this is happening across the UK.
Yeah. And just so that you know how I found Michael Henderson, when I got home on that Friday evening after a hard work day's work of blood and sweat, because it's not easy to earn money, especially through Just Eat. You've got to sell a lot to get where you're getting. I got home and I Googled it, Just Eat fraud, and Nemo's came up, and I rung Nemo's myself, and I said, don't take me wrong. I said, this is who I am. Google me. Can you help me? And they went, yep, this has happened to us. And that is how I jumped onto it, because without that, I would never have known, because I was just looking around in circles thinking, what is going on? Just Eat, we're not having it. They're adamant. We did it to ourselves. You've done it. Only you've got access.
So now let's turn to these local businesses. Thank you, Gina, here in Northern Ireland. Ruth and Wire, the owners of Lily's in Bangor, they told me on Nolan Live last night about the thousands of pounds that they have left, that they have lost, redirected from their Just Eat account to a scamster.
£7,500.
In two or three weeks?
Yeah.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Like, at that stage, like, I would wet myself if that happened to me, right?
Upon the ringing Just Eat, we were made aware that it was going into a Halifax bank.
What?
But we've never, in all my time, ever banked with Halifax.
Like, I'm just listening there to you telling me Just Eat, in terms of when they've already had their profits, it's just dawning on me. They're taking a profit out of a scam.
Mm-hmm.
Out of a fraudulent transaction.
Yes. So it is, that's how I feel, for they don't want to deal with anything, and everything isn't their responsibility. And they, even from this all happened, I will support local businesses, but I will phone them and place the order via telephone, or I will walk in and order my food, or I use a wee local company on a Bangor Eats. And see, even to speak with him, his name's Mark, totally different person even to speak to. You're dealing even directly with him. And if you have any issues or anything, he is just so much different even to speak to.
What chance have the police told you about getting the money back?
Very slim. Very slim chance of getting it back. I was told that how long is a piece of string? And they said it would be a civil matter to deal with the solicitor.
What's a civil matter?
It would be the solicitor dealing directly with Justine, which now...
It's robbery!
Yep.
And how the...
So to me...
Is this a civil matter?
The solicitor knows
it's robbery. Here, can I go and just take, well, 7.5 grand out of your till? Is that all right?
I wish I could. So it is... No, I wouldn't be that lucky. I wouldn't be that lucky. Just like that.
Now, this is devastating local business. I sat in that restaurant on Friday in Bangor, Lely's, and I watched as Ruth's husband was in the kitchen working, customers walking in, he's jumping up in the middle of the interview to go and cook food. He described to me how his family were working right throughout Christmas. You get home late at night, you get those takings, and just imagine how it must feel to be robbed of every penny of it. Here he is.
Can we work until 1 o'clock at night, especially weekend? We have a live music and everything else goes on, so it makes it.
So that's the Bacar owner who we'll hear from in a moment or two. This is we from Lily's restaurant. Let's hear him.
Like 2 weeks, like you're standing us from the 6 o'clock to the 10 o'clock night time, like working for nothing. Then Presley lost the food, the bill, the gas. My nightmare is unbelievable. The whole half of the 7.5 grand from me, they just take 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes. We need to... How hard do we need to work for that? They just 2 minutes, take 2 minutes. But we need to take 2 weeks. Even some all the families working sweat, running, answer the phone, stress. I hate that people.
Pierce and I have told us that police inquiries indicated that bank details of businesses were changed. They didn't receive the payments. They said in the cases they looked at, there was no information to suggest a suspect was located in Northern Ireland. That's so carefully worded. The police have no idea where the perpetrator is. But what they write down in this statement, there was no information to suggest a suspect was located in Northern Ireland. Well, to the PSNI this morning, you don't know who the suspect is. So you don't know if they're in Northern Ireland or where they are. So what are you doing for these multiple businesses across Northern Ireland? What are you doing to trace them? And the cops have answered that by saying to us that the matters were subject to action fraud referrals in line with Home Office guidelines, with both businesses, as the Bacar and Lely's in Bangor, made aware at the time. Is that it? Is that it? Pass the details on to some action fraud line? These local businesses are being cleaned out. So to the cops this morning, to the PSNI this morning, this carefully worded sentence, no information to suggest a suspect was located in Northern Ireland. So can you categorically tell us the crime hasn't happened in Northern Ireland, that the perpetrator is not in Northern Ireland? Let's turn to the Bacara now, a restaurant embedded in the local community. Its owner, Joy, working there for many, many years, getting home at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, cleaned out of 19.5 grand.
Can we work until 1 o'clock at night, especially weekend? We have a live music and everything else goes on, so it makes it hard. You're not home until sometime 2 o'clock in the morning. Especially catering is very hard, and these days it makes it more harder. Every day.
And then you get you sacrifice all that to be able to provide for your family.
Yes.
And then
yes.
The money's stolen.
Correct, yes. That's the money's been gone.
Andy Allen from the Ulster Unionist Party with us today. These people are desperate, Andy, and they're getting nowhere. They're not getting any help.
Yeah, absolutely, Stephen. I watched your show last night. I was deeply alarmed and shocked to hear the revelations and how widespread, as we've just heard on your show this morning, reaching out as far as England, this issue appears to be. And also, I obviously listened with interest to the statement from Just Eat, which obviously, as you've highlighted, appears to be very carefully crafted.
Well, the carefully crafted statement was with the police. I'll read the Just Eat statement here. They say, we take the safeguarding of restaurants across accounts on the Just Eat platform extremely seriously. We were sorry to hear about the cases involving the Bacara and Lili. We sympathise with the owners. They sympathise with them, but they're not sending the money to them. They say, in the case of both restaurants, we conducted a thorough investigation and found there was no breach of Just Eat security. Just Eat say, we have multiple forms of authentication in place to protect our restaurant partners, including warnings not to share access codes and issue regular reminders about online security. Here's what Just Eat is doing. Just Eat are accusing these restaurants of handing over their own passwords, their own access codes to scamsters who are ringing them and conning them.
No, absolutely, Stephen. But from what I heard on your show last night, the business owners are adamant. They're very clear that they didn't do that. And this is a widespread issue, which would point to something probably deeper going on. And I will be reaching out to Just Eat, and I know others may have already done so, to better understand as to what those processes are and what those systems are. But again, I note that none of the business owners appear to have received any information as to what importantly has gone awry here. There is the suggestion that perhaps they have been the victims of cybercrime, whereby maybe phishing emails or something of that nature. But, you know, there is no clear direction or information from Just Eat. I've also reached out to PSNI to better understand their involvement here. Again, I was alarmed to note that some of the businesses indicated that the information flow and the follow-up has not been as good as what I believe it should be. And we'll be following up with PSNI on that matter.
Well, Joey at the Bacara says the police come out January. The police say they come out February. That's it. So he's robbed of 19 and a half grand. Police visited him in February. Can't do anything about it. Bob's your uncle. Gone. No further police contact. Nothing.
Yep, there's twofold issues here. There's the Just Eat issue that we need to address and we need to get to the bottom of. You know, and even just looking online at Just Eat itself, and they have an article published in which they highlight around their authentication process around sending messages. But what alarms me is the apparent ease in which the money and the bank account details for these businesses have been changed online without the knowledge, it would seem, of these businesses. You know, you would hope that Just Eat, or you would want to know that Just Eat have protocols in place whereby bank account details of all things are changed, that businesses would get, and I'm not saying I don't know, I'm not familiar with the processes, but they would get notification that their bank details of all things have been changed. So I'm going to be following up with Just Eat to better understand
there's a farce went on with Ruth's restaurant in Bangor, the Lili restaurant, where she was ringing up to try to complain to Just Eat. And part of their security processes, they asked her about her bank account. And she didn't know what bank account the fraudsters had changed it to, so she failed security. She couldn't get through to Just Eat and to make a complaint, because they were insisting on her telling them what the fraudster's bank account was. But what the fraudster's bank account was. Like, you could not make this up. Michael, give us a sense of how widespread this is.
Stephen, we only know people who's came to us for the representation of Northern Ireland. Now, we have seen Gina, we've heard Gina this morning from England. I believe there's a lot more victims of this, but they didn't know where to turn. Other trade associations across UK have not come out and actively acted on this. We seem to be the only ones supporting these businesses in the food to go industry.
And let's talk about the elephant in the room around that. So you will see in many trade magazines how Just Eat advertise in quite a few of them, how many of the pages in trade magazines are taken up with Just Eat advertisements. So I'm quite curious as to why more trade organisations are not speaking up about this.
Yeah, well, it's kind of surprising to me also. We are the Northern Ireland Food to Go Association. We are here to lobby, support and grow our food to go industry in Northern Ireland. But when we're getting told more cases across the UK, having to come to us, it's very surprising. Because as trade associations, they have a responsibility to come out about this and support their members. To answer your question, yes, it is surprising. And I would like to know also, why are they not coming out against this?
The Sphinx, $6,000. Mario's Fish Bar, $9,000. The Raj Restaurant, that guy was on BBC One last night, that owns it. £53,800. Like, in the name of sweet mama, who could afford this? And these are people getting up first thing in the morning, creating local employment here. Gavin Robinson, I'm going to speak of you again, Gavin, the leader of the DUP. You talked about bread and butter issues. Here's one: taking on big, powerful fraudsters, holding Just Eat to account as to what they're doing. The same with Naomi Long, our Justice Minister. The same with the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt. The same with the SLP, the new leader, Claire Hannah, who one of the businesses said has brought this up in Parliament. What can we do right now? That's the question. Martin in West Belfast. Morning, Martin.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, just curiosity, would there not be like an email sent to say, you know, weekly payment has been sent of whatever you've earned? So the customer would have knew money was going to his bank. From Just Eat to the shop.
Well, what has happened, having spoken to many of these businesses? You've got to, I guess you've got to understand, and I'm sure you do, Martin, that, look, you know, you get up in the morning, you're especially during the Christmas period, and you're working non-stop. Like, that's your big season. That's your big time.
Yep.
And
yep.
You're getting home at 1 or 2 in the morning. Money doesn't come through. Think to yourself, well, it'll come through. There was no high-profile media campaign. The police didn't put this out to say, look, we're aware of this. Just Eat say they sent emails to the owners. But where was the big, high-profile public campaign warning people, if it is a phishing exercise, against this? And there are so many businesses insisting, Martin, they did not hand over the codes. They didn't do it. Where's the scrutiny of Just Eat? Who is powerful enough to scrutinise them?
But where are they based, Stephen? Are they based in, where is their main office? If you have fraud going on your bank, the bank deal with it. Why is Just Eat not just in with?
Well, the cops told one of the businesses, the police here in Northern Ireland told one of the businesses it's a civil matter.
And now, how long is a piece of string?
But how is it a civil? How is robbery a civil matter?
It's not right. There's something not right, Stephen, with the police and with Just Eat. I think people need to stop using it.
Well, customers should certainly know that when they are ordering a meal through Just Eat in Northern Ireland, that local restaurant is not, on occasions, getting the money because fraudsters are getting it. And if the fraudsters get it, if they get it, Just Eat are holding on to some of the money from that fraud.
Yep, 100%.
Connie Egan from the Alliance Party just contacted us. Morning, Connie.
Morning, Stephen.
What can we do about this?
Well, I was absolutely shocked when I watched your show last night to hear that local businesses and businesses that I've been going to for years as well, and our cornerstones of the community in Bangor, Bacara and Lely's, have lost so much money. And fair play to you for highlighting that in your show, because it's a really important issue. I'm absolutely appalled at Just Eat's response. I think they need to step up, given the amount of money that's been lost. And it's really significant to these businesses, £200,000 in total across Northern Ireland. But
it's going to be more. That's just what, to all due respect to Michael, what he knows about his members, it's going to be more.
It is. And I actually think that the Just Eat's response here has been absolutely disgraceful. They're a huge business. They have, you know, they operate in many countries across the world. You showed on your show last night. They have really big celebrities in their advertising campaigns. They can more than afford to reimburse these local businesses. And I think it's absolutely shameful that wasn't their first response. Well, it was to try and blame the victims.
Well, that is what they're doing. So what they are essentially saying is these businesses have been reckless with their own security and have been scammed. And therefore, if you hand out your security codes, Just Eat aren't going to compensate you.
I think if anyone's security is not up to scratch here, it's clearly Just Eat's security. These are local people who are working really hard to make their business viable, provide livelihoods, but also provide services to our local community. I think it's quite insulting to turn around and say that it's their own fault when this is clearly, there's a pattern here. It's clearly happened across Northern Ireland. And I've actually been contacted by constituents as well who have told me that they've had Just Eat money taken out of their accounts when they haven't placed an order. So I think this is an issue with Just Eat, and I'm really concerned and I'm really sad to hear it's been affecting local businesses in my constituency.
So is there anything that collectively you can all get together on as political entities, political parties in Northern Ireland, collectively using your might to have some type of conversation with one of the most powerful, you know, food companies in the world? Just Eat have a massive share. People should know, by the way, that when you pay, I've learned this through investigating this story. Mm-hmm. When you put your order in with a local restaurant, Just Eat are taking nearly a third of that money. A third. It's certainly over 20% of that money goes to Just Eat. So the local restaurant are losing 20% of it before they start. Now they're getting the service of Just Eat, and then if you pay the driver, Just Eat take a slice of that as well. So this is a massively powerful food company throughout the world. And the question this morning is, are they being as responsive to what's happening to some of their customers as they should be, Connie?
I don't think they're being as responsible and responsive to their customers as they need to be. As you say, they take a huge commission on the hard work of these local businesses. So I think it's really disappointing that they aren't taking this seriously. I'm blaming them for this fraud. I think the blame lies solely with Just Eat.
So, Andy, should you all be teaming up?
I'm happy to work with any political representative or leader in Northern Ireland. I plan to raise this in the Assembly when it's back on Monday and ask questions around to the relevant ministers about what we can do. I'm also going to talk to my colleagues in the policing board and ask them to raise this with the PSNI, because I know many businesses are disappointed in the response they received when they reported it to them.
Well, Andy, we've invited all the political parties on this morning to talk about this. It's Alliance and Ulster Unionist Party. You're the only two on. I wonder, can you get everybody together to try to help these local businesses who are really struggling about this?
Yes, Stephen, I often work with colleagues from other parties on a broad range of issues, and this is a very important issue that appears to be affecting so many businesses across Northern Ireland that it should be at the forefront, and all parties, I've no doubt, will work together to try to support the businesses affected. But I want to circle back, Stephen, and an important point, and I agree with Connie, around the responsibility of Just Eat, and I'm deeply alarmed by their approach to this and that they're pushing it off. But if you change your bank account details, you should know about that. You should know about that. But beyond knowing about that, what are the checks and balances that Just Eat have in place? That bank account details, of all things, as I've said already, on their platform through their partner centre can't be easily changed, because it appears to me...
Well, they're claiming it can't be easily changed. That's what they are claiming. They're saying that you get one of those codes sent to your mobile phone if something's tried to change, and that is communicated on their platforms to these restaurants.
An important bit, Stephen, is when armed victims are trying to change their account details back to the original, they have to provide photographic ID. They have to provide proof of bank. They have to do all this when they want to get it changed back to their original details. But these fraudsters seem to be able to do this so easy without providing proof.
Well, Stephen, coming back on that point, again, the response I would like to be seeing from Just Eat then, to say, well, okay, well, this is widespread. We recognise that there is a problem here. in terms of one issue, how do we get the businesses the money back? We recognise there's an issue in our security protocols. You know, if you take, for example, banks provide card readers and unique cards to individuals for them to be able to authenticate. You know, is that systems that Just Eat could, that card reader and that card then goes to the individual business? I suppose the point that I'm making here, Stephen, is systems have failed. They've failed these businesses.
I want you to all be aware of something that came up during the time when I was investigating this. So in the Bacara restaurant, I spoke to three different people in the Bacara restaurant in Bangor who told me that they witnessed a conversation in which Just Eat said to them that they would give them £5,500 as part of the money that they lost. The Bacara lost 19 grand after the profit that Just Eat would take. The Bacara were due about 14 grand. Now, the Bacara claim that Just Eat offered to give them five and a half grand of that 14 grand if the Bacara kept quiet about this and didn't make it public. Now, Just Eat have disputed that. They're telling us that they offered the Bacara £5,000 as a goodwill gesture. The three different people at the Bacara told me that they witnessed a conversation in which that money was offered on the basis that the Bacara didn't go public about this.
It's quite frankly shocking, Stephen. You know, as you already alluded to, this should have been at the top of platforms, warning other businesses that this was going on and highlighting it. So I'm deeply concerned if that conversation has taken place and Just Eat would put any conditions on such a goodwill gesture.
Well, they clearly denied doing that, but yep. I've conveyed to you the sourcing of that. Yusuf has contacted us this morning. You run a restaurant, Yusuf, is that right?
Yes, I'm the owner of the Pharaoh there in Belfast.
Okay. How do you feel about this?
Well, I haven't actually had any money stolen off me that way. However, Just Eat are a very difficult company to deal with. I was just making a statement about the refund policy. So if I send any food out to any of the customers, they have, they can make a complaint to Just Eat and they get refunded immediately, which just comes out of the money that we received from Just Eat almost 2 weeks later. And you know, we don't have a say in the matter. They just automatically refund the customer. For example, if we send out one item in a bag where it clearly has the item in that bag, the customer can just say the food didn't arrive or the item wasn't in the bag, and they just automatically give a refund, and we don't have any say in the matter. So I've actually put a post up there recently on Monday or Tuesday to say that I'm coming off Just Eat. To all the customers, we've been with Just Eat for probably 10 to 12 years now, and I have to contact our account manager, Just Eat, weekly to try and dispute these claims and refunds. And
I'm hearing from local businesses that it is such a powerful platform that it brings so much trade that it's very, very difficult to leave them because there are so many customers that use them.
Well, yes, but sometimes less is more. Like the commission rate is 14% plus the VAT, plus the 50p admin charge, and that comes off your bill. So I'm actually just looking at my invoice here for this week, and they're taking their percentage and also all the refunds coming out this week as well. And they've taken their commission rate from that as well, and then just refund the customer. So it's very difficult to make money from Just Eat.
What do you make of what you're hearing this morning about all of these restaurants throughout Northern Ireland?
Yeah, well, I think it's ridiculous. Just Eat should definitely step in here and help the businesses out.
Should they, though? If and it is a big if Just Eat's right and these businesses are being fished, in other words, scammed by fraudsters, is it ultimately all of our responsibility to protect our own bank accounts?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not quite sure how these companies don't realise the money's not coming in their account, because I check mine every kind of Friday whenever I receive it just to make sure I did. But, yeah. These numbers are are very high.
Somebody was saying no in the background there. Who was that?
That's myself, Stephen Michael. You're saying should these victims bring it on themselves to get the bank? They never had the money, Stephen. For the request this money from the banks that went into the fraudsters, it had to be Just Eat to do so. It left Just Eat's account and went into the fraudsters. They're the only people who can request this money back from these banks, as these victims never had a hand on this money at all.
I want to know how deeply the PS and I have investigated this, by the way. Like, this is not somebody walking into a corner shop and stealing a Mars bar. This is major fraud right across Northern Ireland. The police.
Well, we've been working tirelessly now, Stephen, on this for about three years. It's good to know now you've got involved. The PSNI reached out to us yesterday. Now we see other political parties now sitting up and taking notice. Maybe as an Ireland Collective Voice, we'll support the Food to Go Association on this matter, and we can get a successful outcome on this.
Now, Mark, Bangor Eats was mentioned earlier on. You run it, do you, Mark? Good morning.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
So you're a local equivalent to this, are you?
Well, we work in the same industry as Just Eat, but I'm very pleased to say that we operate and treat businesses very differently and fairly. So Bangor Eats, we partner with around 80 businesses based across Bangor and Donaghadee. And yes, I was mentioned on your show last night because we would work closely with Bacara and Lily's. Just want to thank you for bringing up this story. We've been aware of it for quite some time, but really not surprised at Just Eat's response. They're such a big company. Their attitude really is, if you're not a McDonald's or a KFC, they don't really want anything to do with
you. Well, you would say that because you're a competitor of Just Eat. The reality is that they are incredibly popular with customers and business. They've got massive market penetration, so therefore their model works.
And I suppose that's one of the things that we try to get out as a business, to tell customers that you do have a choice now, and to break that reliance on using Just Eat, because you've highlighted yourself already this morning that they're the highest commission charging of all platforms. We see invoices of £2,000 or £3,000 a week from businesses just to be listed on their platform, but they don't have any local office or local support. They only have a small team of sales agents in Northern Ireland. So there's the follow-up, if there's any issues or complaints, like that last caller said about customer refunds, is very slow and very poor. We would encourage people to.
So the commission isn't 30%. It's 14%, is it? Plus VAT.
It is plus VAT, correct? Yes, and more if you use the Just Eat drivers as well. But I mean, I would encourage people to either use a local platform or order direct with the takeaway. But it's just trying to get that out there to break the reliance on the higher charging apps.
Let's get back to the heart of this story this morning. Some businesses, the Raj, as I said, 53,000 robbed. The Bacara, 19 grand. Robbed. Lily, 7.5 grand. Robbed. Maru's Fish Bar, 9 grand. Robbed. How easy, if you're providing a similar service, how easy would it be for someone to online change a bank account within your business and for you to start sending money to somebody else?
Yeah, it just couldn't happen without the business owner knowing about it. I mean, we wouldn't change a bank account detail via a text message or a phone call. We would need to see somebody face-to-face and then get it followed up with an email. It just wouldn't happen, and that's coming from me as a small business. So for Just Eat to have all their protocols in place, we're sort of gobsmacked for them to wash their hands to say that it has nothing to do with us. And you're quite right. I mean, we work day and daily with these businesses, and we've seen over the last few years, you know, they hit every which way, from rent and rates and the cost of stock and gas and electricity prices. And for this to happen to them, I mean, in Bangor alone, we've seen closures of around 15 or 16 food to go businesses over the last 12 months. And Michael there from Food to Go Industry does a very good job of flying the flag and with government to get these issues highlighted. But no, in terms of, I mean, bank details are one of, if not the most sensitive data that we keep on any of our business partners. So to say it's been changed and we wouldn't know about it, it just couldn't happen.
Mark, thank you. Andy and Connie, look forward to seeing what our local political parties can do for these local businesses.
Stephen, if I may just make one or two final points, really. what I haven't heard in any of this is Just Eat, you know, and the reliance they have and the network that they have and the broad reach that they have, is none of it has said that they are exploring what has gone wrong.
Well, they said they have investigated. They're essentially saying these companies are handing over their own details to fraudsters.
Yeah, they've investigated it, but I haven't heard them then saying, right, we're going to reach into these businesses to try to better understand what has gone wrong, because, you know, this is our platform. You know, what has happened and what can we do then to increase protocols, increase awareness around the other businesses? And I would echo Mark's point, you know, beyond that, that I would encourage consumers, where possible, that they would engage with restaurants and takeaways direct and make sure that we're maximizing the amount of income that they can create. These hardworking businesses that provide so much to our economy. So if we can engage with them direct, we potentially reduce these incidents happening.
Okay. Andy and Connie, thank you very much indeed. Michael Henderson, thank you. Stay in touch with us, Michael, from the Food to Go Federation. What a story, actually. The power of the customer is in this as well. You. And where you order and how you order and how you support local business. William in Portadown. Good morning, William.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Just a quick thought. Just I was thinking about the way the payments are made here. I smell a rat here. Sorry, you're talking about the restaurant business smelling a rat, but the
what are you talking about?
Surely, Just Eat are the party that's being defrauded. If they're making a payment to an account with the details they hold, the restaurateur still hasn't been paid, and surely there's a legal obligation for them to be paid. That's where I smell the rat.
Oh, I see.
Just Eat recorded the customer details wrongly and paid it to the wrong account. The restaurateur would still be due a payment and could take legal action to retrieve the money. Just Eat are giving the money away to the wrong person. Surely that's Just Eat's problem.
It's a really good question to be asking, and obviously we would need some type of legal expert. In fact, why don't we try to do that as a follow-up on subsequent Nolan shows? It's a really good point. It's Just Eat that are sending the money to the wrong people. Just Eat are saying it's the restaurant that have allowed their own details to be changed.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard the guy say that the no quibble refund policy, when someone chances their arm or otherwise and says, I didn't get this food, and it's paid out. Well, at the end of the day, the restaurateur hasn't received payment and
You'd probably find the terms and conditions there that they've signed up to that and they Just Eat terms and conditions. But William, thank you. Noel next in Uri. Morning, Noel.
Well, Stephen.
Yes, Noel.
Well, you're looking for a legal expert there. I'm one.
Right.
listen, if somebody asks for fish and chip and it's fish and chip, £6, and somebody comes to the door and says, give me £12 for a fish and chip, you know what you tell them to do? Take it away with them again.
What's this got to do with this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying, but if you're giving your man Just Eat, whoever they are, give them a big load of money for a fish and chips, who would give it? Or an Isle Burger? Should Isle Burger
do you not feel? Do you feel sorry for these restaurants?
Oh, geez, no, I don't know. No, but I'm not saying anything about the restaurants. No, but I'm only saying, but right. Somebody coming to your door looking for...
There's nobody coming. We're not talking about people coming to the door.
See, and your man delivering it. What are you on about?
Oh, sweet.
Here, do you want a good one before you go away?
Yes.
Right, Just Eat. I think I asked this question before. See, we'll go to a different story. A rat.
No, let's not. Thank you, Noel. Good morning. 03030 80 55 55, 10 to 10, the Nolan Show from the BBC. If you want to watch that programme about this Just Eat scam throughout Northern Ireland, it's on the BBC iPlayer. It's part of Nolan Live. Our first episode was last night. If you search Nolan Live on the iPlayer, you'll find the programme. Next, on yesterday's programme, the PSNI slammed the Department for Infrastructure. It was actually on Good Morning also with Buckler, for their silence around taking illegal posters off lampposts. The department have hit back. They're pointing the finger at the PSNI. Essentially what's happened here is Bobby Singleton, who's an assistant chief constable within the PSNI, has said it's the Department of Infrastructure that should be taking these posters. It's their job to take them down. So John O'Dowd, the minister, he's hit back yesterday afternoon and he said, no, it's not our job, it's yours. And so the magic roundabout music is prompted yet again. I think we're 20 years into using this music on this programme, where the public sit back and watch as people in authority blame each other, say it's anybody else's responsibility but theirs. And the magic roundabout music is out of our cupboard and playing loud and clear this morning again about vile racist posters. So, whose responsibility should it be? Whether we get these vile sectarian posters up in our community, whether we get these vile racist posters up in our community. Is there any chance of, again, the leadership in this country sitting down and working this out once and for all? Are we really, as a community, going to be treated with so much disrespect that the people in leadership in this country continually tell us that they can't work out or agree who should be doing it? And how do the racists take this? They must be laughing. How do the sectarian bigots that are embedded in some of our communities, well, they just put these posters up with impunity. And then hear leadership across Northern Ireland blaming each other. Now, to be fair to Assistant Chief Constable Bobby Singleton, in terms of the racist posters that were up in Rathcoole, his men did go in. His men did take them down. The police did take the lead this week. Now, I've heard some people say, what do we want next? If your grass is too long in your local park, do you ring 999? Get the police to do it. Maybe you need a bit of guttering done. You want the police climbing up ladders to do that too? This is a force that is under-resourced, has not been given a budget that they need, according to the Chief Constable. So what do you want? Policemen up ladders? Now, I can tell you this morning that the housing executive did go in to Rathcoole and did take down some posters. So you have an inconsistency here. I can also tell you that the Department of Infrastructure have gone in and taken posters down in the past. So here you have John O'Dowd, Sinn Féin Minister for Infrastructure, him very publicly telling Bobby Singleton yesterday, it's your job. We expect the police to get up those lampposts and take them down. But actually, John O'Dowd's department has taken posters down in the past. When the police rang up the housing executive staff went out and took them down. So this is a complete mess. There is no protocol. And with all these public statements, can they get it sorted out? Writer, Belfast Telegraph columnist Malachy O'Doherty with us this morning. Morning, Malachy.
Morning, Stephen.
And the senior former police officer, John Burrows. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Malachy.
Morning, John.
Let's just remind people what ACC Bobby Singleton told Buckler on Good Morning Ulster yesterday.
It has taken far too long. And as I say, it's got to the point where police have decided that we must intervene. Albeit, we still maintain the position that actually the removal should have been done by the Department for Infrastructure.
And that's when O'Dowd hit back and said, no, it's your job. Malachy, what a mess.
It is a mess. But I mean, my starting point is that this is a crime. You know, if you're going to put up posters in a housing estate threatening the entire population of that housing estate, that you are watching them and that you will deal with them if they help to locate Muslims or what they call illegals, then that is a threat being issued against a large number of people. So the first responsibility of the police in that instance would be to gather evidence and find out who is issuing this threat. And the only immediate evidence available to them is the poster itself. So it should be the police who should go as quickly as possible and get that poster and take it as evidence of a crime and have it forensically tested.
But John,
and find out who put it there.
But John, I was saying it a bit facetiously earlier, but if look, the crime is in them being put up. In terms of taking them down again, do we want the police climbing up ladders?
Yeah, I think every case is, you know, is fact specific. Now, there's clearly people, you know, in society here, the police, you know, the political class, the government, they don't want to get into a precedent here where they're going up and sending people up ladders. They're dealing with all the murals, all the sectarian graffiti, all the paramilitary and the things that are erected around the country. So I think that is the elephant in the room. That is why people are frightened. Or you know, averse to dealing with what is very clearly a very simple issue. There's a racist poster in Rathcoole. It shouldn't be there. It's an offence, and it should have came down within.
How can they not all get together, sit down in a room, and on our behalf agree what they're going to do? Like, I've been doing this story since I was in CityMate 20 years ago.
You know, we have devolved government here. We have a police service here, and there should be a meeting with the relevant representatives there from the housing executive, maybe from the executive office, certainly from DOJ, the police, and the Department of Infrastructure. And they should have a clear memorandum of understanding about who does what when. And there'll be cases where it'll be the police are investigating an offence, but they might ask the DOI to use their expertise or facilities to be able to get someone up.
With regards to Rathcoole, yeah, the police asked the Department of Infrastructure to take them down. And Bobby Singleton, this is according to Bobby Singleton, and Singleton says they took so long not doing it that the police went in and did it. 7 weeks.
Yeah, and that's where you need a memorandum of understanding that says who does what when and what circumstances. And
but
how
I
do
think
you
there's
arbitrate?
A difference here, isn't there? Surely the difference here is you would have a lot of places, housing estates, where the tricolour would go up or the union flag would go up or whatever, and there'd be graffiti. But it would be claiming, in a sense, to represent the character of that community. This is different. This is the gun being turned on the community itself. And therefore, it's a qualitatively a different type of crime. It's a much, much more serious
thing.
But
Maliki,
people are threatening neighbours here.
Maliki, this is not going to be sorted without process. And so the information that we're putting out there this morning is this. So the cops ring the housing executive and ask for help. We understand the housing executive acted immediately, took the poster down immediately, in other words, the same day that the police asked them. Meanwhile, Department of Infrastructure takes 7 weeks.
If somebody put a poster outside your house, Stephen, saying that if you have any dealings with Muslims, we will come for you, then you wouldn't call the housing executive or the DFI. You'd call the police, because that would be a threat against you. These posters are threats against the people living in the area. It's a policing matter.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, you know, and that's what I was trying to come in this specific case, this is a crime. And there's two aspects. The police and I both investigate crime, but actually the statute is used to prevent crime. And in leaving the poster up, the crime was actually committed for 6 weeks. You know, so in many ways, we have the state has facilitated the ongoing commission of that crime, because it was stirring up racial hatred, it's intimidation, and it went up for 6 weeks when it could have come down immediately. So, but I think what is spooking the different agencies is the fear that they're going to be asked to do this with other cases. So I think we need to get people right in the room, get a memorandum of understanding, and get clarity, because it's ridiculous. We say we support people from racism, but actually we stand there with hands in pockets arguing Hoover takes over a poster that could be snipped down in 10 minutes.
Let's see how this plays out. Let's see if they get together. I understand that there may be some things happening behind the scenes where the Department of Infrastructure and the police might get together. Let's see if that actually plays out and happens. We'll ask the housing executive what their protocol was actually that allowed them to do that on the same day and for them not to ask the police to do it. We'll put that question in. Here comes the news at 10. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being with me. I was mentioning Nolan Live earlier this morning, which started back on BBC One last night. It's sitting on the iPlayer. We also had a debate about the Education Minister Paul Given meeting up with the LCC. The LCC issues the thinking of the likes of the UVF and the UDA. What was the education minister doing meeting up with the LCC? Well, I'm very, very carefully briefed, as in I do believe it's accurate that the vast majority of that meeting was the LCC talking about how they could ask the minister for help with underprivileged children, getting children through 11 plus exams, for example, and that the vast majority of that meeting was the LCC talking about diverting children away from violence. Is there something slightly farcical in an organisation which conveys the thinking of the paramilitary UVF, UDA, Red Hand Commando entities talking about diverting violent children away from violence? How comfortable was the minister in sitting down with the LCC? Should there be any bar from meeting government ministers if you are conveying any thinking of any illegal organisation? Well, that is a fair question for the Department of Education, for example. Who were you talking to? What were their backgrounds? What did those people who you're talking to think of the UDA and UVF? For example, should the minister have been there? What checks and balances are there before a minister sits down with the likes of the LCC? What impression, what signal does it send to young people in our communities? There's the education minister, and he's sitting down with an organisation that speaks on behalf of the UVF and UDA. Next week, 18, 19-year-old teenager asked to join the UDA, asked to join the UVF. Oh, well, that's the organisation which the LCC speaks for, and they're meeting up with our education minister with suits on. Those issues obviously playing out in the public domain yesterday. I understand that it was literally the last 2 minutes of a wide-ranging, long conversation, literally the last 2 minutes, that the LCC brought up the Irish Language School in East Belfast with the minister. So then you ask yourself, why did the LCC then issue a statement talking about that Irish language school and conveying to the public that that's what they spoke to the minister about, as well as the other issue? Now, why would they do that? Will Paul Given ever meet them again? There's another question. Now, a Department of Health watchdog has hit out at the minister, accusing him of having misplaced and out-of-touch priorities. Emma Cubitt was appointed as the new independent autism reviewer earlier this year. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So you're in the news today. You're criticising Paul Given. Why?
Why? So I visited Oakwood Primary School this week. I came home from that visit and I watched the spotlight show, Tower Mills spotlight show, with the mothers. Four mums of Rudy, Danny, Owen and Theo. I then went onto Facebook and once again, there's a lot of photos of the education minister at schools. There's another post about attendance matters and I felt I had to speak out. The juxtaposition of what I saw myself firsthand this week does not sit well with me.
What juxtaposition?
So you go to Oakwood School in Belfast, fantastic school, fantastic teachers, great kids. I then went to the St. Field School. The building works are underway. There's 19 pupils who have not been able to start school. I then meet the mothers that are much further down the other end, in that spotlight movie. And I think, no, these children at this young age are being failed in St. Field. Is this where they're going to end up down the line? I need to do something. And I think it's uncomfortable for me that there's been, I'll call it a distraction in a sense, in the media that with the LCC meeting, that the priority has not been on key issues. like these children who aren't getting their education.
So are you comfortable with the minister having met with the LCC?
I have no opinion on that. I don't care who he meets with. I'm disappointed he hasn't met with me. I've been asking for a meeting since before the 2nd of September. I genuinely don't have an opinion on that. Any action that does further, you know, the opportunities for underprivileged children is helpful.
You wrote in your statement that Paul's getting his priorities wrong by meeting the LCC.
Well, that's not exactly what I said, but yes, I think in this particular week, you know, where has the coverage been in relation to these children without school places? Should that not be a priority? That's the question I'm asking. Is that not the priority?
What you said is, it is beyond my comprehension that while so many children with special educational needs are actively being denied their right to education, Minister Given is proposing spending £250,000 to restrict mobile phone use in schools and is meeting with an umbrella organisation representing paramilitary organisations.
Yeah, I mean, fundamental right is the right to education. And when your education minister is talking about schemes around spending that amount of money to restrict mobile phones, the parents and the families that are impacted by this, that's devastating for them. They already feel forgotten about. They already feel that they're invisible. And I think the further media coverage in relation to the LCC was particularly distressing for them, because they're like, here we are again. You know, nobody's listening to us. Nobody's coming to see us. Nobody's standing on the St. Fede site looking at these unfinished works. And that's where I have the issue, is where is the minister meeting these? Does he know? I know he does know, but what is he doing about it?
Well, look, we need to be fair to Paul Given, as we attempt to be to everybody. And so this is a minister who has been on the ground, who has been out meeting schools, who has made decisions. You know, he's implemented a school building programme. He is criticised, and some people have been pretty hard about the mobile phone initiative. It's a decision that he's taken, at least, is it not? Where he believes that there is evidence from around the world which suggests that if children are not distracted with mobile phones, that there is hard empirical evidence to show that their education improves. At least that's a minister making decisions, Emma.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad he's on the ground. I'm glad he's going to visit schools. That is a really positive step. It's important to do that. But the issue of the mobile phone, again, I don't want to get distracted into the details of those things, but that might have been better placed down the line once he could say all children are now in suitable school placements. Now, I've spoken out about the use of the money for that, but it's the timing of it that I have the issue with. Do that once you can say all the children in Northern Ireland have suitable school places and they're in them.
So help me understand the situation in terms of the children who do not have an appropriate place.
Well, I mean, they're pretty in the dark, the parents, as are the school. With the statementing process, they have, I'm not sure if all of them actually know for sure where their children are going. This is an issue in Oakwood. There's also an issue in other schools. There's lots of children with special educational needs not in school because there's no suitable place. The issue with Oakwood, I think, is that there were promises made by the EA to the school and to the parents that this would be finished by the 30th. Now, one issue which particularly disturbed me was the fact that the EA, my understanding is, they have not yet written to those parents to update them. So you have parents with children, some of which will have fairly complex needs, sitting at home, not knowing, are we definitely going to be sending our children there? When are we sending them? And again, that's highly distressing for those parents and their children.
So you have been appointed by the Department of Health as the independent autism reviewer. You're telling me it's your understanding that the Education Authority haven't given even that modicum of respect to those parents by writing to them and telling them what's going on. Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying. And that's exactly why I released this press statement, because that's what I'm saying. It beggars belief. And unless you sit in that school and you listen to the teaching staff and to the teachers and the work that they're doing, they worked all summer and had constant site meetings to ensure that this would be in place, and it's not. And that's gravely disappointing. And I asked as well about what provision are the EA making in the meantime, because obviously that's their statutory duty. They're not making any provision for these children. It's the school that's doing that. It's the school that's providing Clients Day mornings and doing home visits, but the EA are not fulfilling that duty.
Well, here's what the Education Authority have told the Nolan Show. They say, due to the level of works across the education estate to increase capacity, some schools are currently operating alternative classroom arrangements, or they are offering an extended induction period to enable attendance and facilitate the completion of a learning environment to meet the specific needs of the children and young people. We will continue to work with schools and families during this period to minimise any impact for our children and young people and ensure as smooth a transition as possible into their new school environment. So you listen to that statement and you think to yourself, we'll continue to work with schools and families. You're telling me they haven't even written to them.
No, I have to be honest in what I've found so far. They don't answer the phone to schools or parents. And
what?
That's very concerning for me. As I said earlier, I'm only 4 weeks in this post. I haven't had to dig very deep. The amount of emails I'm getting from very, very distressed parents who cannot get any answers. And I mean, this extended induction period, I think you need to call it what it is, which is children not being afforded the right to education. It's not an extended induction period. That's ridiculous to call it that.
You're a straight talker, aren't you?
I am, yes. that's the job I do. I mean, last night with those four mums, when you see and hear these stories, what other way am I to talk other than to say how it is? And that's what I want to be sure of getting across.
So in the 4 weeks that you're in the job, yeah. I understand that's a brief period of time given
very
what
brief.
I'm about to ask you. But does it feel to you so far like the Education Authority is fit for purpose?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like it's fit for purpose. Again, I mean, this role has been pending for a long time, so I haven't been sitting on the sidelines. I have been engaging with parents. I'm aware of the situation, and it always surprises me when the 1st September rolls around every year when school starts and there's still children not in school placement. Now, it's not just as simple as that, but I mean, I have asked to have open and free access into the regional offices of the EA so I can see firsthand the processes that are in place, because I really need to understand why things are going so wrong, because there doesn't seem to be any logical reason. And yes, this is just...
Have they responded to that? Who have you asked for the access?
I've asked the EA now. I have an invitation to meet with the Director of Children and Young People Services in their EA headquarters.
That's going to be an interesting meeting.
It will, yes. That's not what I want. I want my review to get going into the nitty-gritty. I want to start at the baseline here where the correspondence issued, how it's issued, why they're not answering their phones. I want to get right in to the mix of it. So I'll go to this meeting, but I'll continue to request a meeting with the Minister for Education and regional offices.
But you have asked for that access. Will the Education Authority give you that access?
They may not. I don't know. I would encourage the Minister for Education and the relevant directors to encourage their staff to be open. I'm not here to upset or annoy people. I'm in this role to ensure there's accountability and openness. and transparency. And the only way I can do that is see what's happening.
So have you been given the access?
No, not yet.
Have they responded? And have they said yes or no, or they just haven't responded?
I think there's a distraction email in, we'll meet you somewhere else. But at that meeting, I'll ask for that again. Stephen, I'm going to be here for 5 years, hopefully. So I'm not going anywhere. And I want to reassure parents and schools that this isn't something, it's a passing phase. I will keep prodding and poking at this until I get to the bottom of it. I won't be setting up any more working groups. I won't be doing any more paper exercises. This is a doing role. We need to see change, but it needs to happen now.
When did you ask for the access? Because it's fundamental. You're saying it's fundamental. You need to get in and see what's going on. So it's
fundamental.
It's why I'm labouring the point. When did you ask for it? They haven't come back to you. So they're either going to give you the access or they're going to block you.
I think that's the bottom line. My role depends on the goodwill of other people. If the EA want change, if they want to live up to the vision and the ethos they put out, my role presents a real opportunity for transformation. So I would hope that they would welcome me. And certainly hope this morning that following your show that perhaps there'll be a more open invitation for me to come and start my work.
But you're pretty damning about them. You're saying they're not even answering their phones to desperate parents.
You say damning, I say fact. It's a fact. And I know that the words used by both the Good Morning Ulster programme and yourself are, accused and I pit out. I'm simply stating fact. That's what I'm delivering. I didn't want to issue a statement like this. I felt it was absolutely necessary, but these are facts.
Why wouldn't they answer the phone? Is that about resources or what's that about?
I want to find that out. That's what I want to know. I think the situation's really, really, it's intolerable. The impact on parents can't be overstated, but also for children, the sense of they belong in our community, they're part of Northern Ireland, and the very first sense of belonging is when you get that at school, you get it at preschool, and when you can't get into school, I think that goes very deep into your sense of belonging.
Oh, listen. Well, I can only talk about my personal experience. Spring Hill Primary School, top of the Ballygamartin Road. It was a joy to go to school each day. I remembered the teachers vividly and the amount of work and overtime and dedication they put into me to make me a confident child from a working class area. I then went to Inst. And I got exactly the same dedication to me as an individual. Like what school does to someone is incredible. And then we start to think about children with special educational needs and the extra obstacles that they have in life. Look, the Department of Education, Emma, have just given us a statement while you've been talking on air.
Okay.
I'll read it to you. They say meeting the needs of children and young people with special educational needs is a priority for the Education Minister. They say there's been a significant increase in the number of children requiring specialist education provision since 2020. That's necessitated the creation of additional capacity across the system. For the 2024-25 year, this has involved the establishment of 183 new special education classes, creating 1,450 new places. The establishment of new provision on this scale has required a significant programme of capital works to ensure school facilities can meet the needs of children. There have been unavoidable delays in the opening of on-site provision while building works are being completed. Now, do you accept there have been unavoidable delays?
No, I don't. Autistic children and children with special educational needs have existed in Northern Ireland always. The 1st of September comes around the same every year. There's something, and again, this is what I want to find out. Why is the planning for this very inevitable event, which is starting school in September, not properly planned for. Now, my view would be one child out of education is one child too many. So I can't accept that those delays are unavoidable.
What is your background? Where have you come from?
Where have I come
Who
from?
Who are you? Where have, yeah, because you're, you know, you are a straight talker. You're taking these people on. What's your background?
Background professionally is law. Qualified solicitor in both private and public sector for over 15 years. But in the midst of that, my youngest son is autistic, and I know exactly what these parents are going through. And one of the things I struggle with most, and that's why I took this role on, and that's why I won't shy away from what's happening, is because I know the law. Like, and to be fair, most of these parents also do, and I know how short they are falling. When I hear statutory duty, that's a must-do. The right to education is an inalienable fundamental right, and I'm just not sure it's been taken seriously. Now, my motivation for doing this is autistic people that I've met, that I've talked to, that I've spent time with, that I love being around. And I honestly think that a lot of these individuals who have the power to make decisions, had they been spending time with autistic individuals, they would feel as motivated as I am, and they would do everything they can to stop situations like this arising.
Well, if you know the law so well, why are you not immediately doing everything you can to enable these parents to sue them on behalf of their children? Why is the Education Authority and the Department of Education and all of these people not being sued?
There are ongoing judicial reviews, and I've spoken to parents who've done that. That's a long, hard process, particularly if you have a child with needs who isn't in school. Now, I can't get personally involved in individual cases, and to be clear on that, I can go and I can talk to people, I can listen to them, I can meet their families, but I can't give them advice. There are great solicitors out there, there are great charities. There's a National Autism Society, there's Autism NI, there's the Children's Law Centre. So that avenue is always open to families.
So 19 children without a school place. The special needs, they don't have a school place. In your view, is that a breach of the law?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. That's a breach of human rights. I mean, there's no excuse that any child should be out of education in Northern Ireland. And that's the baseline from where I'm starting. My role will be about human rights. It'll be a human rights-based approach. And I know I might not be popular for saying the things I said this morning, but I'm not in this for the popularity vote. Certainly not. But yeah, there are clear breaches of the law. There's no doubt about that.
Do you accept that the Education Minister is doing his best?
I haven't met him. I don't know what exactly he's doing. I imagine he is in a very, very difficult role. And I imagine he is trying his best, yes. I could answer that question more confidently.
Can I cut across you?
Let
me sort that. You've said that you'd like to meet him. To be fair, he's listening. So he has reached out to us this morning to say that he will set up a meeting with you now.
Okay. I'm really, really grateful for that. I am. Potentially, I would have liked to not have to be on the Nolan Show to make that happen. That's good news.
To be fair, Emma, we ask for these politicians to be reactive, to listen, to engage. There's a minister listening to what you're saying and picking up the phone and saying, I'll meet.
Yeah. And that's,
you know, rather than these political parties and some of them, you know, they sit back and they try not to be answerable or accountable. There's a guy saying, okay, I've heard you, I'll meet you.
Yeah, and I accept that. And at this moment in time, that's all I want. And I'm really, really grateful for that. I mean, any minister, any any department that wants to talk to me, I will make myself available. But no, I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
Maybe you can let us know how that meeting goes, Emma.
Yes,
thank
I
you
will.
Very much for talking to us today.
Okay, thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. Tara Mills has made a brilliant documentary on this. It's called "I'm Not Okay." It's part of within the Spotlight family. It was for Spotlight. And it's available on the BBC iPlayer now. So that's I'm Not Okay by Tara Mills. You can find it on the iPlayer. And I'll see you all tomorrow morning if I can get rid of the burps. See you in the morning at 9 o'clock.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.